I'm really glad that you could join us for the latest podcast. Delighted to be chatting to Henry Hopkins, who's a filmmaker behind quite a hard-hitting and personal documentary, Heading Away from the Ledge. Henry, thank you for joining me for this. I'll just read the synopsis. Filmmaker Henry A. Hopkins tells the story of his brother's struggle with mental illness, drug addiction, and the dramatic effects it's had on his family. Heading Away from the Ledge is an intimate and poignant look into a world that many families can relate to, which we can all learn from. So, as I say, Henry, thank you for taking the time to chat to me this evening. Or your morning, I should say, because I'm guessing it's about 10 a.m. over there.
It is 10 a.m. in Boulder Creek, California.
Thank you. As I said, it's difficult subject matter. My first question, because it must have been a struggle to decide to make this film, and I know you talk about that in your Film Freeway bio. But what was the, and again, I know you mentioned your family, but for the sake of people that will be listening to this, what was the ultimate decision point that you thought, I am going to talk about, you know, this situation in my own family? Was there like a point that you thought, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for chatting with me, Steve. We started with, as you saw in the film, my mom kind of mentioned, I've wanted you to tell this story.
Yeah.
And that was true. You know, she knows I'm a filmmaker. I'm a video guy. I've been, you know, that's all I've done, my career. And she wanted me to tell the story. I wanted to tell the story. I mean, we had really what was happening in my family was an amazing story, a disturbing story, a dark story, a challenging story, but the perfect story for a filmmaker trying to tell a story that's not necessarily unique. It's happening a lot, but has all the elements there. The problem was I just wasn't ready. I just couldn't do it. I mean, pointing the camera at my family alone seemed tough and weird. It wasn't done. It wasn't over. Still to this day, nothing's gotten better. So it's not like that's done. We can start healing from this, and we can start pointing the camera at this and try to tell the story. It was just very active, and I just couldn't. It was just very challenging for me to want to step that close to the fire. I guess that's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
I got to a point in my life where, I just felt it was time. I guess what the truth is that my brother at the time when I started filming was doing really well.
Yeah.
And it was the best he's ever done. And you can't quite tell that from the filming, because it goes from down to up to down and all over the place. But realistically, when I started filming, he was in a really good place. He was sober. He was doing a lot of art. He was, taking his medication. He was just doing really well. And I said, okay, this is a time where I can have a real conversation with my brother and my family and not be in danger, not have to deal with, putting out fires every day. We're in a good space. So that's where, when I started, for the film, it dropped out pretty quick after that. So I did get back in, deep, but, that's, I just wanted to tell a story. I knew it needed to be told, waiting for the right time. And just jumped in.
Thank you. What's quite interesting, I spoke to a filmmaker yesterday who'd made a short narrative film, and it was she's got a connection to the medicine for her husband, and the film deals with her husband passing away, and she tries to cope with it using meds and alcohol, and it becomes an addiction, obviously. And what we touched upon is the scale of the problem, obviously globally in the US and in the UK, but we didn't really go any further into it. And we veered off into other things we're chatting about. But having seen it from from your family's point, and of course, this is reality, not a piece of fiction. But is there a way you can give us a sense of scale? Now you know you've been part of that, to give us a sense of scale of how bad into the mental illness and addiction there is in the US? I mean, is it possible to try and give us an idea of how terrible it is? If that's the right word, sorry.
It is indeed terrible, and it's really bad. And it's not something that you can go throughout your day and not see it, know that it exists, and you see it on the news or you see whatever, read a book. It's in our faces. So there's not one city. I live near San Francisco. I've lived in San Francisco for a long time. I now live near Santa Cruz. My brother's down in LA. All these cities, you are surrounded with you know, people with severe, you know, living on the streets, homeless, and with severe drug addiction and mental illness. And there's not really, there's very little oftentimes where there's one without the other. Those two things go hand in hand. And I can get into a lot of I don't have an answer. I just know we are doing it wrong. I don't know what the, you know, the right way to do this is, but we're kind of just, we're very hands off, and I could speak for California the best, but this is happening in cities all over America, some more than others.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in California, we're it's a little too hands off. You know, I think that we're looking at it like all the homeless people and the homeless problem is someone who just kind of fell through the cracks, and we can help them. And there are. So if you're a person who is barely kind of getting by and lost that job, and maybe you have a couple children, you have expenses, or you're in an abusive relationship and you have to leave that, now all of a sudden you've kind of fallen through the cracks and you're sleeping in your car and you're looking for a new job, but it's hard to find a new job because you are living in your car. So California, I think, looks at the problem at those people, and those people do exist. But the vast majority of people aren't those type of people. These are people who've beyond fallen through the cracks. They have severe mental illness and they have severe drug addiction. And those people don't need just a little handout to get better. And I, from my personal experience, my brother's been given every opportunity, been giving every handout, been giving, and from my family, from me and my mother, as well as the government. And there are fantastic systems. But what I'm saying is that there's going to be, have to be something more dramatic than just housing them. My brother's been housed and it does not work because he has mental illness and he has drug addiction. So until we essentially heal those wounds, whatever those wounds are, that trauma deep down, and that's going to take putting people, not in just to sit them into a house, but getting them really, you know, really quality help. And that means not only getting them off drugs and that kind of assistance, but healing those that trauma. And that trauma is going to be, you know, therapy and groups. And, you know, we don't allow animals to live on the streets. We pick them up because we feel bad for them and we put them in a place, even though maybe they don't want them. But ultimately, that leads to being in a better place, you know, getting adopted. So I'm not saying, you know, trying to together, but you understand are essentially just saying hands off. They're humans, they're, you know, but they're living in the mud and in tents in these really horrible situations. And I think the government does need to kind of reach out a little bit firmer hand at times and maybe remove people, because my brother is, and again, just all just from personal experience, my brother's done the best when he's been removed from his situations, because he's not quite able to do it himself many times.
Right, thank you for that. Now, you're quite a seasoned filmmaker, and that's a positive thing to say, in terms of, you know, you've been around the art for some time, and I know you've worked on lots of different projects, you've got your own production company. But even with all that, was there, and knowing how to make a film, of course, in a very professional way, was there any point when you were making this film that you were like, I've started something, but I'm not sure I necessarily want to finish this? Was it go, 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 and you just, once you started, you didn't want to stop? Or not didn't want to stop, wouldn't stop, might be a better way to put it.
Yeah, well, I, you know, so this is my first, I've had a video production company, H2 Video, for 10 years, and I've, you know, been doing it for about 15, but I've been doing, you know, corporate video production for the most part. I'm in Silicon Valley out here in the Bay Area, so that's, so I have not, this is my first, you know, feature length documentary. So a lot of learning in that, even though I do have the skills and the know-how, from a technical side. Many times I wanted to quit, and many times I did take breaks. You know, I was filming for about 2 years. I've probably captured maybe half, if that, of the stuff that happened within that 2 years, just because I needed time. I needed breaks, and I have a job, like I just mentioned. I run a company, yeah. so I can't just be in LA, which is a, you know, 7-hour drive from here that often. And also a lot of times when things got really bad, they're a bit dangerous. You know, my brother had, you know, would have strange people around and drugs and a lot of things going on. So a lot of times I thought I didn't ever want to quit. But I was constantly questioning, what is this? What am I doing? Is this a story you know, what is the story? What is the point of this? Who's, you know, it just, and is it good enough? Is it, you know, filmed well enough? And, you know, I'm just a kind of a stickler when it comes to quality and things like that. So something like this, which I did completely alone, do not recommend necessarily, but at the same time, I could not have a crew.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's what makes this film so special, is that it is extremely intimate. Mm. And I couldn't achieve that with a crew, but it also made it extremely difficult. And there was a lot of things that weren't included because audio was messed up. I just didn't capture it in the way I wanted to. So, you know, but to answer your question, yeah, there's a lot of times where I was doubting, questioning, wondering what this is going to look like. But when I did start piecing things together and that, you know, editing things together, I would have these glimpses of, wow, this is actually something special. And ultimately it's just extremely pertinent right now. I mean, there is, like we were just talking about, this is happening to the world. It's not just, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. You're experiencing this, whether it's your own family or friends, or you're just seeing it from a day to day. So I just kept pushing, and I'm glad I did. But it was a tough road.
Thank you. And some of the sequences in there, I love the way I know obviously it's very hard hitting, but I love the way you filmed some of it. I like with, for instance, I think it's your mother smoking a cigarette. And it's quite almost talking heads. That's the wrong way to describe it. It's very difficult to describe what I'm trying to say. But for me, it wasn't what I would call a traditional way of filming. I've seen hundreds of documentaries as well, as you can imagine. In fact, I was watching a couple today and their face on camera talking, and that's kind of archival footage and, you know, the usual. Don't get me wrong, they're brilliantly made. But the way that you put something together was really interesting. And also some of the shots when you had like family photos, which must have been tough to decide to use those. And I suppose the question is, how do you decide to film that way? I suppose that's an impossible thing to answer because it's the way you're just being creative, but it's a really excellent way of filming certain parts of the film.
Yeah, I don't think there was that much thought at the end of the day, to be honest. I just started capturing things. I just started filming. The more time I spent, what is this going to do? How am I going to tell the story? It's just daunting. So I just started filming. And I kind of, you know, my mother, a lot of her interviews are sitting down, and that was because just to get her focused and try to tell this very complex story. And I didn't tell the full story. There's so many more situations and events that have happened through the years, and it's been so overwhelming. We don't even know we just don't remember. There's just so many things. And I think that is, you can kind of feel that in the story where it's just like, there's so much getting thrown at you at times. You know, my mom kind of reads this, she kind of writes diaries and she reads this one entry. And it's even in that one entry, she just talks about just so much stuff and you're just getting little pieces and you never really get answers to any of that stuff. But I think you get the feeling of there's just so much going on. And going into this film, knowing that, I was overwhelmed. I didn't quite know how to wrap this whole story together. So I just started filming. So there wasn't honestly that much thought into how am I going to do these interviews? How am I going to film things? I just started following the action and trying to be a fly on the wall, which is interesting. Because I mean, I think the most interesting thing about this film is just kind of that. Like, I'm filming it, but I'm also their son and their brother, and that element was interesting. But naturally my family did really well with that in a strange way. They opened up and they just talked to me, which, and a lot of times they're kind of talking to the audience in that way. So I don't know, it was an interesting process. And I've I'm glad it turned out the way it did, but there wasn't a lot of thought going in. I just saw the opportunity and just started filming.
Thank you. And I know when you're employed and, you know, commercial, you've always got you know what the runtime's going to be for broadcast, everything is it. But I think yours is in an hour and nine. Was it simply a case of, I'm just going to put in everything that I want to put in there, regardless of the runtime? And that was never a prerequisite when you're putting this together?
Correct. I knew I wanted it to be a feature length, but I didn't have a specific time. I'm not sure if it should be longer or should be shorter, but I couldn't at this point probably make it shorter with the content I had and with the story that was told. There's just a certain amount of buildup of like who my mother is and her struggles and my introducing these people, kind of getting into the background of my brother, moving into, kind of reconnecting with my brother after a jail stint.
Yeah.
Moving into his kind of growth and kind of coming out of these dark times and then the kind of recollapse of things. I couldn't find a way to make it shorter. And I think longer is would be a little bit too much. It's already a lot kind of tucked in and you kind of, yeah, I think, leave kind of trying to catch your breath, I think, a little bit. So I think longer would have just kind of been too much. So, you know, again, didn't put too much thought into it, just landed at that time and I'm happy with that.
Henry, thank you so much for your time. And as you know, we talked about this before the intro, and I know it's a really personal film, of course, but I just wanted to say, you know, brilliantly made. And really thank you for A, putting the film into our festival, and B, taking the time to chat to us about it. It's real, real pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you for your time. I was very excited to be a part of the festival, and it was great talking with you, Steve.
If you would like to submit to one of our festivals, please go to www.fusionfilmfestivals.com. Thank you.